Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
The not knowing whether he's alive or deceased is it's a kicker, I'll tell you. And I'm trying to get the word, keep the word out there. I'm a truck driver, and just about everywhere I haul grain and fertilizer, because I'm back into hauling grain and fertilizer, I'm getting down into where a lot of the feed mill or feedlots are and stuff in southern Alberta, and I make sure I show the wanted poster, or I drop a wanted poster off at the feedlot, because James was, even though he did a lot of his growing up in town, that boy was country through and through, and when it comes to working with horses and cows, that was his thing. So I'm trying to keep everything out there, you know what I mean? CBC News, which is Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and Global News, which is another Canadian, obviously, they both told us that because it's not a criminal matter, that they weren't going to touch it. We were lied to because they have covered other missing persons that weren't criminal and extensive coverage. Like the Ryans took the case out of British Columbia. They, Global and CBC they covered that, no problem.
On August 6th, 2017, 17-year-old James Candy disappeared from his home in the Vegreville area of Alberta, Canada. After he climbed out of his bedroom window during the night and left his home with only the clothes he was wearing and the lariat he used on the family farm. Earlier that evening, his parents had talked to him about his use of marijuana in their home after his mom had found a small amount of it in his jacket pocket. Before he went to bed, he and his dad made plans to do some work the following day, agreed on a time, and said, "I love you," to each other. This would be the last time that James's father spoke to his youngest son. The next day, his parents realized that he was missing and called the local police. Searches for James commenced, however, no trace of James has ever been found. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 167 of The Vanished, James Candy's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. James Candy lived in rural Alberta, Canada, with his family on their farm. He was the youngest child in their blended family. He enjoyed working on the family farm, participating in rodeos, tending to the animals, and playing with his dog Reggie that his dad Colin had brought home for him. We spoke to James's parents for this episode, and this is what his mom Karen shared about his life.
James is the youngest of a blended family. When Colin and I met, he had three children, and I had three children, and so he has six older siblings. Considering it's a blended family, he knew absolutely nothing but love from any of his siblings. It was actually pretty amazing. You would think there'd be animosity. He took over being the little boy, and all of his siblings absolutely just adored him. He had fairly normal upbringing. We had three of his older siblings every second weekend, and you know, of course lived with the other three. So I always worked. So did his dad. So he was raised up by literally all of his siblings and ourselves. The oldest, 14 years older than him. And the youngest before him is 7 years older than him. And she actually never played with dolls because she had her own live doll. Even though, you know, through teens and dating and everything else, they still remain very close. We went through some financial hardships and we lost our house 6 years ago and moved out to the country. So James was 13. That's when he actually started to blossom. In school, he was very small. Unfortunately, you know, he was bullied in school for it. And once we moved out here, he started growing. He always said it was the fresh air and manure. As we got in chickens for him to take care of. And he absolutely loved the country life. He loved any kind of animal there was. He raised chickens. So it didn't matter how cold it got. He still had to go out and feed and water the animals, which he did. He was pretty amazing about that. He took on responsibilities that we never even had to ask him to cut the grass, shovel snow, anything like that. He just did it. And now getting older, he wanted to get into rodeo. He found a way to have horses on our property without us investing money into horses. He managed to hook up with a lady in school that had a couple horses that she needed to board close by. And if they were willing to help us fence, she could have her horses here. And instead of paying for boarding, she was teaching James how to ride. We thought it was good. No money out of our pockets, no money out of their pockets, just a mutual agreement to help each other.
James's father, Colin, shared more about James growing up.
James is, he had quite the good sense of humor, that boy. Yeah, an awesome sense of humor. And, you know, all through growing up, he was just a normal boy, I guess. Quiet, but normal. He liked to do, you know, boy things, fishing. And when he was old enough, he used to come hunting with me and everything. He liked his baseball. He loved his baseball. Holy crap. He couldn't get enough baseball until one year he had a bad coach, and that was the thing about James. If he had a bad experience, that was it, done. He played ball and he loved his ball.
Karen also spoke about how James differed from other teens his age with his love for working around the farm and riding bulls at the rodeo.
He enjoyed baling, hauling bales. He would restack bales just for the fun of it. Never seen anybody do that. Yeah, he absolutely flourished out in the country. And Butt was still bullied because even though he was growing, after you're bullied, you're always a target. After 4 years of being bullied by one student, couldn't take it anymore and belted the bully. School did nothing to help. In fact, the bully went back to class. James was given a 3-day suspension. The one bully, after he was belted, started defending James from the others, but because he had hit somebody, the others just turned up the dial. That summer, he took his first ride on a bronc. He absolutely loved it. He held on for almost 7 seconds, which is pretty cool. And even when he finally landed, he just yelled, "That was awesome." It had been hot that day. He hadn't eaten or drank anything for a while. They'd been working in the chutes and bucking horses. And after the adrenaline rush, when it was coming down, he looked like he was going to faint. So I was asked to go check on him. And the rodeo ground fence is very tall, and I fell off going to him and broke my leg. But he was determined to ride in the rodeo. So he did actually, 2 weeks later at the Harry Hill Rodeo, he did an exhibition ride. Didn't last very long, but what he wanted.
Karen mentioned that James had received a 3-day suspension from school for hitting another student. According to his family, James had been tormented by this bully for many years, and Karen shared how James didn't quite fit in with his peers and how she had given him some advice on how to manage the bullying.
Months before he disappeared, he bought his first truck. He bought it off his godfather. It's an older truck, but it needs a new motor, so it doesn't run. But it's the style that he likes, the old square body trucks, not the fancy new ones. He always said he felt like he was born in the wrong decade. He should have been born in the 50s, not in the 2000s. Dealing with the bullies, we didn't encourage physically taking care of it. One of the things he said was a game changer for him was what I had used when I was young. And when somebody comes up to you and says you're weird, say thank you. Yes, it doesn't hurt any less, but it changes their reaction. And that's what they're looking for, is the reaction. He said that was a game changer for him because everybody constantly called him weird and he would just say thanks. And bullies didn't know what to say to it.
James's dad, Colin, spoke about how he had also been bullied in school and how he knew that James would be profoundly impacted by the bully's behavior. Karen and Colin attempted to intervene on James's behalf with the school, but their concerns fell upon deaf ears.
We had gone there numerous times. Karen and I had both gone there. And, we'll deal with it. We'll talk to them. But they would never admit that anybody was bullying. It's just, kids will be kids. And it's not really kids will be kids. It's someone's being a jerk and bullying, and that's just the way it is. But that school, the principal, no, it's all fine. There's nothing like that here. Or he would deal with it. And we heard a lot from a lot of other parents, actually, but the same things. Their child being bullied in that school, and nothing was done about it. So I told James when he was in high school, I said to him, I said, James, if I got to get a hold of the RCMP, I said, we'll go to the RCMP. No, don't do that. Why not? If they're being assholes, they're hurting you or anything, we'll go to the RCMP. No, can't do that. So he wouldn't let me go to the police. I abided by his wishes because I know from personal experience that when my dad, the people that were bullying me, got off at my bus stop and wanted to fight. And mom and dad, the bus stop was within eyeshot of home. And mom and dad saw this, and there were six of them that got off the bus and six of them that wanted to give me a licking. And my dad came out there and he straightened things out. And, enough was enough. He told the other guys, he says, all right, Colin, which one do you want first? He says, I'll hold the other five back while you give them a licking. And it's all good, Mr. Candy. No problems. It's all good. Now, after that happened, well, then it got worse. Oh, your daddy's going to come and stick up for you. Well, let me just make sure we get you when daddy's not around, when daddy's not looking. We'll get you in the dark. So I'm sure James was figuring that would happen to him too.
Without the cooperation from school staff to acknowledge the bullying James was being subjected to, James relied upon his cousin, Jacob, who attended the same school. Jacob aided in his defense on many occasions. This is what Colin had to say about how Jacob was able to be James's voice when he wasn't able to stand up for himself.
He went to school with his one cousin, with my nephew. Jacob was more the in crowd and James wasn't, so to speak. And if somebody started picking on James, Jake and James were only a month apart, Jake would put an end to it right now. Leave my cousin alone. That's it. And then Jacob went to live with his dad, so he wasn't going to the same school anymore. And then the bullying seemed to have gotten worse, but James used to try and just play it off. No, they're not doing anything. No, it's fine. I knew there was something going on. I was bullied in high school, well, all throughout my school. And I knew there was something going on, but he wouldn't admit it to me. Whereas with myself, I admitted it to my parents, yes, but James wouldn't admit to it. Just, no, everything's fine. We were finding out a lot from Jacob. Jacob was telling us that, he'd tell my mom that people were picking on, they'd pick on James all the time. Everybody was picked on him. James was a slow grower, so to speak. he was very short throughout all elementary school. He was very short. He was on the bottom of the percentile for growth, the very bottom. They picked on him for being short, and that's how we found out about it. It was from Jacob. He would tell us about this, or tell my mom about it, and then my mom would come to us. And we tried to work on things with James, and we noticed that, or I noticed that he developed but when I was young, I had a temper too, but I guess, I don't know, I learned to control it over the years. And I said to James when he had a couple of outbursts, I said, you gotta learn to control that, buddy. You gotta get that under control. You know, sit back and take a deep breath and count to 10 and everything works out. Trust me, I've learned this. This is what you gotta do. Okay, Dad, I'll try. There was one day in school, in high school, at the grade 10, I guess it was. We'd moved as well. So James was taken out of the school that he was in and put into a different school because of where we lived. So he got a year off without any of his bullying. But then after that year, then those people from the previous school, then they all came to this high school. And that's when it happened that the young fellow had been picking on James and picking, I guess. And James got up, walked across the classroom and laid him out cold. One punch, done, out. Down for the count. When it came down to everything, James got an out-of-school suspension because he punched him, but the other guy didn't get any suspension because he didn't punch anybody. So even though he was a bully, how do you prove that to teachers, right? But they should know that. But he was allowed to remain in school, and James got the out-of-school suspension. It's not right to get up and punch somebody, but on the other hand, when somebody's picking on you like that, you have to defend yourself too, right?
In the months prior to his disappearance, James was dealing with some challenges that may have felt insurmountable. On top of the bullying that he was experiencing at school, there was a job that James was excited about starting that he was suddenly passed up for, as well as trouble getting his driver's license and the emotions of liking a young woman that didn't reciprocate his feelings. Colin spoke about what James was going through that summer.
That summer, nothing had gone right. He wanted to find a job. That was his last summer. And then into grade 12. And then after that, he was planning on going to college. So he wanted to work. He told us, he says, my plan for this summer is I'm going to get a job. I'm going to work. I need money because this is what I have to do. I want my pickup truck on the road by the end of summer or midsummer, so I can drive it. I need my driver's license. And I was working as a farmhand then. The money wasn't great, and we were struggling. Karen had a broken leg, so she wasn't working. So we were one income, and what I made was not a lot. And I just couldn't seem to get ahead to pay for James to get his driver's license. Just couldn't get ahead. Just for the boy to get his driver's license. $100. I just couldn't seem to get it. My dad's been a stagehand for 40-some years, 50 years, something like that. And he told James, he said, I can get you on with some, there's some big concerts coming to Edmonton. I can get you on the concerts. Okay. Because my dad is like number 3 in the seniority list of 400. So my dad talked to the union, and 2 days before James had left, dad had called, because I'd asked him, I said, sent him a text, and what's going on with union? Is there any, I thought we should have got called for these shows already. Dad called me back and he says, I just found out this afternoon that they're not allowing any permittees to come on under the age of 18. So I had to break James that news. He has to be 18 before they allow him to work a concert. I was working concerts when I was 13 years old, and James wanted to do that. So the work wasn't there that he wanted. My employer brought him up for 2 days and said, yeah, you'll probably work with your dad for the rest of the summer. And then all of a sudden he hired 2 young Mennonite boys, and no, I don't need your boy right now. I've got the Mennonite boys here. And so I had to tell James, I said, well, Jim's hired a couple of Mennonite boys. And well, what's wrong? Didn't I work hard enough for him? I said, no, you busted your butt for him. He likes you. Well, how come he hired the Mennonite boys? I don't know. I don't have an answer for you. So that was really disheartening for him. Nothing was going right. He just wanted to work that summer. That's all he wanted. Work and get his driver's license.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. James's parents remember the day that he disappeared, not only because it was the last time they saw their son, but also because his mom had found a small amount of marijuana in his possession. Karen and Colin told James that he couldn't go out with friends, and instead they had a family meeting. Colin described what happened leading up to James's disappearance on that very last day.
Throughout the day, it was actually a really good day. Him and I did a bunch of stuff. We had to go check out a fence that we were looking at taking down for a lady because we wanted all the fence rails to fence our 10 acres for the horses. We'd actually gone and taken down a bunch of fence boards that night. I had to go do a job. Springtime, I have a custom lawn cutting and stuff. So I had to go do a lawn in Mandaire. So I went, loaded up the tractor, and I went to do that. And while I was doing that, or before I left, I'd set up the smoker to do some ribs because our daughter Melissa was coming out and her new boyfriend at the time, Daryl, they were coming for supper. So I'd set up the smoker with six racks of ribs in there. So James was looking after the smoker, which is something he really enjoyed. He always liked to play around a little bit with cooking. And especially when it came to the smoker, he just loved anything that was done in the smoker, and he would try and smoke things. But he looked after the ribs that day. Then Melissa and Daryl came out for supper that night. We had supper. They had left. And then his buddy Austin came over, and we had a fire in the backyard, small fire. We had bonfire in the backyard, and we were sitting around there. And then they decided that they were going to go over to Amber's place. So they loaded up a bunch of wood in the little trailer to pull behind the quad, and they were going to take off. And then they had everything all loaded up. And James says, "Oh, got to go on in the house for a minute." And then he came out, and that's when Karen caught him with that. When he came out, I was out in the yard doing things. So I said, "All right, see you later," Karen happened to notice this blue container in his jean jacket pocket, and she's, "Oh, what's this?" And I turned and looked when she said that and did that, and the look on James's face was, "Oh, shit." And Karen opened it up, and she says, "Weed." And it's just, "All right, mister, you're not going anywhere for the night. You're staying home." So his buddy left, and James and I talked about it, his usage, how much he was using, and addictions and stuff like that. We, our son David was an alcoholic, and it was the alcohol that killed him. So James and I talked about addictions. David died of alcohol poisoning. And my youngest sister, love her to bits. I truly do. But that crystal meth has got her by the short and curlies and will not let go. And James knows that. From what I understood from him that night, it was he was self-medicating himself to keep his temper in check. And he said it helped him concentrate in school. He said, as soon as I started using it, my marks were going up. And his marks were going up. His marks were phenomenal. They were getting better and better every year. Maybe it was doing something. I don't know. But his marks were getting better. You know, we didn't have many violent outbursts from James at all. But the ones that we did have, they were not occurring anymore. So maybe it was he said it was self-medicating.
Karen and Colin wanted James to understand why drug use in their home was not allowed. And if James wanted to pursue a career in the rodeo, he would have to take drug tests that could disqualify him if he continued to use marijuana. Karen spoke about the discussion they had with James that evening.
We sat down and had a chat. There was no yelling, no arguments. We just sat down and had a family discussion. We told him that we were disappointed in him for the drugs. And that was probably the straw that broke the camel's back. The bullying wasn't getting any better. Financially, we weren't getting ahead. We didn't know until later that there was a girl he thought he was in love with, and she kept telling him no. She did not reciprocate. If he didn't talk to us about that, everything, it seemed to snowball for him. Everything kept getting worse and worse and worse. So we were disappointed in him. And that was the straw that broke the camel's back. Because it was that night he disappeared.
Later that night, Colin heard some noises that woke him up, but he didn't think too much of it because James's dog, Reggie, often moved around his bedroom at night. It wasn't until the next morning when he realized that James was gone.
I heard some noise around 12:30. The noise I heard, because he always had his dog in his room, and his dog was a big dog, a Shepherd Collie Cross, so he was a big boy. It was 110 pounds, so yeah, he was a big boy. But Reggie would lay against his bedroom door, and when Reggie would move around, the door would bang back and forth a little bit. And that's what it sounded like, was the door banging back and forth. So I thought nothing of it. I didn't sleep very well that night. I was awake at 7 o'clock because we have what they call a driveway doorbell. It's a motion sensor, and if there's anything on the driveway, it would sets off the motion sensor, and the doorbell would ring. And the doorbell was ringing at 7 o'clock. What the hell's going on here? Trying to get some sleep and the damn doorbell's ringing. Anyways, sit up and I look out the bedroom window to see what's setting the doorbell off. We had two white-tailed deer in our yard that were back and forth in front of the sensor. And I thought about waking James up, show him the deer, and then, let him sleep. He needs to sleep. So I didn't bother. So I got up about 9 o'clock and started making some breakfast. And quarter after 9:30, I guess it was, I went to wake him up and knocked on his door. Nothing. Knocked again. Nothing. What the hell? I opened the door and Reggie comes out of the room and looked at the bed and blankets are all in a big pile. What the hell? So I went over and grabbed his blankets and he wasn't there. I thought he was under the blankets. He wasn't under the blankets. And then I noticed that the room was just full of freaking mosquitoes. What the hell? Why are these mosquitoes in here? Well, what's going on? And the screen is out. Why is the screen out of the window? Where's James? So I called him. I thought maybe he'd gone down to the bathroom or something. So her bathroom's in the basement. So I called for him. No. Went down to check. No, he wasn't in the bathroom. Come upstairs, checked the porch, and his cowboy boots were there. Then I realized that his clued in, his bedroom window was open. Okay, maybe he went out and he's working on a slosser, so trying to get an early start or something. So I went outside and started calling for him and nothing. He was nowhere around. I figured we just brought his pickup home a week before, and I thought maybe he might have been working on his pickup truck, and no, he wasn't working on his pickup or wasn't working on a slosser or nothing.
After Colin realized that James was gone, he started to look around his bedroom for any indication of what he may have taken with him. Maybe that could give him an idea of where to look for James. Colin found two things that disturbed him. James had only taken his lariat, and there was a handwritten note left behind. This is when he knew that something bad had happened and called the authorities. This is what Colin remembers about that morning.
Came back in the house, told Karen that he was gone, and nowhere in the yard. I was yelling for him outside and calling, and no answer. I went back in his room and looking around, and I noticed a piece of paper on his desk with a pen on top of it. So I grabbed that paper and, "Dear family," what the hell? And then I started panicking. It's, oh my God, Karen, he's left a suicide note. Karen had a broken leg, so she wasn't moving very fast. She's getting upset. Well, bring it here. I need to see it. Bring it here. I want to see. I scanned over the notes quickly. I gave it to her. And then I went back outside to look for him some more. So I went to the barn and I climbed up the hayloft and no, not there. Checked around any outbuildings we had in the yard. I was checking. I was scared I was going to find him and nothing. I went back into his room again and I noticed something kept drawing my attention to the floor. And I'm looking on the floor. What's drawing my attention to the floor? And then I noticed James was just getting into calf roping. There would have been three ropes, his rope, my rope, and our rope. And his was gone. I was around out in the yard and around the house, into any bush around the house and looking in trees and everything. And couldn't find him. And I went back in the house and Karen says, "We got to phone the police." So I phoned the RCMP and that's when the search started. I called them about 9:45, I guess. Then they were out and the search started. They took it very serious. You know, we gave them the note. They put the note into as evidence. They took it very serious. Within half an hour of them being there, because they checked all the outbuildings the same as I did. You know, I told them I'd been there, but, well, we have to. Well, whatever, go and look. So by the time they checked all the outbuildings and they walked through, you know, two officers came out and they walked around the bush there. They didn't find him. Then it was, okay, we've got a dog man coming out. We've got the RCMP dogs are on their way. At this time, one of our neighbors was driving by and they noticed RCMP vehicles in our driveway and they stopped. What can we do? I says, well, I said, I'm probably going to saddle James's mare. I said, I'm going to be out in your fields here. And Dwayne says, I got 3 horses saddled in the trailer right now. He says, we'll unload where he wants to go. So I told him to head east from our place down the fence line and back around, check the bush there. So immediately they unloaded 3 horses and parked the pickup and 3 of them were on horseback and away they went. By the time they got back, we had 3 different fire departments were there, including mine from my department I belong to in Two Hills. They were starting to initiate ground search. I can only hope that he didn't harm himself. Can only hope. He stated in the suicide note that he had gone to attempt it once before when I was on the road previous summer. And he decided no, he couldn't do that because Dad was in Ontario. And who's going to look after the dogs? And Mom's scared of horses. Well, Mom would look after the dogs, but Mom's scared of horses. So who's going to look after the horses? So that was in the note. And so he said he didn't do it, but he said he was going to attempt it. And that's as far as we know. When we talked about suicide with anybody else, James always said that that's a long-term solution for a short-term problem. He'd always said that. And that's what Karen and I said too. And I guess maybe he was just telling us what we wanted to hear or something. But, you know, if we heard of a suicide, that he'd shake his head and, you know, a long-term solution for a short-term problem. Thought he really understood that, but obviously, I don't know.
After Colin found the note, he gave it to Karen so that he could continue to look for James and call the police. Karen spoke about reading the note that James had left for them.
Well, he said that he couldn't handle us being disappointed in him. He wanted us to take care of his dog because he knew we would. He wanted to go be with his older brother, who had passed 4 years ago, and his previous dog, who we had to put down 3 years ago. And his note contained the information about the girl that he was interested in. And he'd taken his jacket, his hat, and his lariat. We don't even know if he had shoes on his feet because he always wore his cowboy boots and they were still in the back porch. He may have had a pair of shoes in his room that we didn't know about. So there's nothing missing that we know of other than his lariat, his jean jacket, and his hat.
Karen mentioned that James's lariat was missing. A lariat is a rope that is used to lasso animals on farms and in rodeos. The fact that it was missing was deeply disturbing to Colin, who had been unaware that James had previously considered harming himself until he read the note. Looking back on the day that James disappeared, Colin shared what he feels is important for other parents to know about their teenagers.
We trusted James and we took it for granted that he wasn't doing anything wrong, and we never bothered to go over his, check his phone or anything like that. Like, his older sisters, Karen and I, when they were old enough and they had their cell phones, we were always checking their cell phones. Always. But we never did with James. Because James was never in trouble or nothing or wasn't doing anything wrong. Where his older brothers, oh my God, this was a regular occurrence. I think the RCMP knew exactly where we lived. They knew us. We knew all the RCMP in Beggarville by name. Anybody under the legal age that has a cell phone is still living under their parents' roof. I feel a parent needs to check cell phones and see what's on there. And there's so many things that I found with James's phone, how you can hide videos and stuff like that as to make it look like something else. And, you know, different apps that are there to hide things. And there's an app. It looks like a calculator. It works like a calculator, but if you punch in the right code on the calculator pad, it opens up a whole new storage thing for pictures and videos on your cell phone. I didn't know about that until I saw that.
Colin mentioned earlier that they had lost their son, David, 3 years before James went missing. Karen added that in the note James left for them, he said he wanted to be with his older brother. According to Colin, the two had an especially close relationship.
When the oldest boy, David, when he was 15, he decided he didn't want to live with his mom anymore. So he came and lived with us until he was 18, 19, I guess. And he just loved being around his little brother. He would lay on the floor, you know, David being so much older, but he'd lay on the floor and play cars with James and, you know, stuff like that. He loved his little brother. And James really looked up to David and really bonded with David too, because his older brother, right? I think he hid more than we know. I can't be sure, but I'm really thinking he hid a lot more emotions than we know with David. Like, when he found out that his brother had passed, there was a lot of tears, but James wanted to be strong. It was towards the end of the school year. Exams were coming up and he had been home. But James took it upon himself, because we gave him the choice, and as well as his teachers, told him that, you know, you don't have to do your exams. We'll work on it another time due to circumstances. And James says, no, I'm going to school. I'm going to write my exams. And so Karen and I said, well, you know, we'll give you a ride to school. We'll drive you there and pick you up. And he says, no, I'll ride the bus. Are you sure about that? Yep, I'm going to ride the bus. He tried to be really, very, really strong. He really missed David because they had been so close when they were younger, you know. David used to come out and they would wrestle around and stuff like that and play wrestle. And they have a blast, those two. From what I've found out through going through his phone, text messages and stuff, he started using it after David's death. So he started in grade 9.
Colin shared that the RCMP has been very thorough in their search for James and have contacted the family on several occasions when human remains were located in the area.
There was human remains found the afternoon. I can't remember if it was that afternoon there were human remains found or the following morning it was found in Red Deer, Alberta. And the sketch that was put on to the news media, the picture of it is, it could be James. But this person was in there, and we'd asked the RCMP, and they said, no, it's not James. The person is in their 40s, and yeah, it's definitely not James.
Karen spoke about the initial response from law enforcement and how they played an important role in the first searches for James on the day that he disappeared.
When Colin talked to them, they were bringing in a police dog because they, you know, within an hour of the police first showing up, there was a canine unit here, and they were searching the yard, see if they could figure out which way he went. By that time, one of our neighbors was going to be doing some rounding up of their cattle and moving them, and they had their horses all saddled up, so they just joined in the search. Unfortunately, the horses and everybody looking for James had disturbed anywhere around the house that they couldn't find which way he went. So they just kept getting more people in and expanding the search. But the police dogs weren't any help in finding him.
Shortly after James went missing, there were a few leads that indicated that James may have been seen. Karen told us about those possible sightings.
Well, initially there was a few truck stops that the RCMP did check. The first subject they were checking had not gotten close enough to any cameras to verify identity, which is something that James would do. There was one in Calgary at a Walmart, and again, if there was a camera around, they were looking down or away from it. And that is the kind of thing that James would do. So, because he was always very camera shy, getting pictures of him was always difficult. Some that were absolutely negative, they were definitely not James. Many that were simply inconclusive. They could not see the person.
You've heard me cover cases in the past where the missing person's loved ones are threatened by a stranger via text message or on social media. Sometimes these threats include a request for money in exchange for information about where the missing person is. On December 19, 2017, James's parents received a message on his social media account. Colin shared what happened.
December 19th is when I received it. And I'd go on James's Facebook and Messenger and check and see if there's any messages or anything. Anyway, this message came from a person by the name of Mike Barley. And I've gone to the police with this. I've checked out the profile. They told me to initiate an investigation or a conversation. There's been no response at all since then. But the message that was sent to James was, James, if you're still out there, I hope you answer this or I'll be waiting at your front door till your parents go missing too.
Colin hoped the authorities would be able to track down the person that had sent this message and be able to determine whether or not they knew anything about his son's disappearance. He also wanted to know if this was a valid threat or simply an internet troll. However, he was told that because Facebook is a foreign company based in the U.S., that they wouldn't work with Canadian law enforcement.
I asked him about getting an IP address, and they said, well, that's from Facebook Messenger. I said, yes. Because Facebook is based out of the U.S., Facebook will not deal with any Canadian law enforcement agency. The only ones Facebook will deal with is Homeland Security or the FBI. And on a missing person case, they won't deal with a Canadian law enforcement agency to go after an IP address. So we've been told that it's not a direct threat. It's an indirect threat, which it is. And, you know, they're worried about it. You know, they're investigating as much as they can, but they can't really go very far. The night that we received that, when I showed it to Karen and after I'd contacted the RCMP about it, I had to leave for work that Wednesday night. And before I left, Karen says to me, she says, I need a favor. I said, what's that? Come with me. Okay. I followed her into the bedroom and I have a 410 double barrel shotgun that sits beside her bed. And she says, I need a refresher course on the usage of this thing, please. There was only Karen and the dogs home. I was taken off on the road again for the night. I don't like leaving my wife at home. It scares the hell out of me, especially with this message now. The RCMP told us, oh, you know, we're only a phone call away. I says, yeah, you are. You bet. And the best you are is 8 minutes. I said, we're 14 miles to Veg. We're 14 miles to Two Hills. I said, I've responded to fire calls in Two Hills, and I've managed to make it there in 8 minutes at 155 kilometers an hour, which is about 95 miles an hour.
The family was never able to find out who had sent them that threatening message, and they haven't received any more threats. Who would have wanted to send such a message, and why? Is it possible that this person does know what happened to James?
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Working on this episode has been particularly distressing as a parent myself. Hearing how James was bullied is heartbreaking. I wanted to learn more about why people choose to engage in bullying, so we spoke with Dr. Jonathan Singer, who is an associate professor of social work at Loyola University in Chicago and researches suicide intervention and bullying in adolescents. He's also on the executive board of the American Association of Suicidology. He shared that bullying is defined as a pattern of intentional, repeated, targeted abuse.
A bully tends to be someone who is of a higher social status than their victim, but not all the time. There's a difference between the profiles of online bullying and offline bullying. Offline bullying, what we think about as traditional bullying, you tend to have it's more physical. You tend to have more boys. It peaks in middle school, and then it decreases in high school. With online bullying, it tends to be what we call more it's relational or emotional, and it tends to be more girls, and it rises during middle school, and it doesn't taper off during high school. And so you have a different profile. So with online bullying or cyberbullying, you're more likely to see girls engaged in what we think of as traditional bullying activity, which is this intentional, targeted abuse that has its goal of solidifying someone's social standing or changing the social standing as a result of the bullying.
Dr. Singer shared what goes on in the brain that causes adolescents to bully each other and fail to intervene on the behalf of those they see being bullied.
We know neurobiologically that when adolescents are around their peers, they engage in more risky behaviors than they would when they're by themselves. So you have Larry Steinberg, who's a developmental psychologist, He's done brain research on simulated driving with adolescents. And what he's found is that when you have an adolescent driving alone in a, you know, in a simulation, they make about the same number of driving errors as an adult. When you put even one more adolescent in that driving simulation, the number of errors increases significantly. But when you add an adolescent or an adult into an adult driving simulation, the number of errors doesn't increase, right? And so this points to the adolescent brain and the way that it processes information and really the influence of peers on their ability to not take risks. So if we translate that into an upstander bystander situation, even at the neurobiological level, right, what we have is we have a situation where somebody might be able to have told you in a school assembly or when you're talking with them one-on-one, no, of course we shouldn't stand by while somebody else is getting picked on. But when they're around their peers, they are much more likely to have faulty judgment or to engage in things that might be risky. At the same time, on a social level, that same processing would inform the decision, this is going to turn out bad for me if I'm the only one to step up. Adolescents are so focused on being accepted by their peers that the possibility of doing something that would cast them as an outsider or put them at risk for being the victim is completely contrary to their developmental stage. Simultaneously, you're like, I'm glad it's not me. I'm curious to see who wins because that has something to say about how the social order might change. And that affects me personally. Adolescents are going to do something risky if they think it's going to be rewarding because their brains are desperate for rewards. And things feel better when you're an adolescent. The highs are higher and the lows are lower. And so when they see a fight, it's really like unbelievable. So good, right? In their brains. Somebody's an upstander is somebody who steps in and says, you know what? It's not cool how you were talking to that person. Or probably more likely, if they see somebody getting picked on, they'll go over to the person who's getting picked on and say, hey, you want to sit with us at our table? It takes away the power and it says, you're not going to be able to increase your social standing or get a benefit socially by picking on this kid. But in school environments where there is this tacit approval of bullying, then it does seem to be, at least anecdotally, it totally seems to work. And you see it because you have teachers that bully. So you'll have the teacher that picks on the kid. And oftentimes it's the kid that's got some visual marker, right? And so they will engage in bullying behavior. They'll make jokes at the kid's expense. Or when the kid is picked last, they'll make a comment saying, and as usual, Joey, picked last, right? Sometimes they'll bully kids for religious reasons. And it will be widely perceived by the students, it is okay to do this in our school because our teachers are doing this. Again, not to other teachers, but to students. So that's a long way of saying, yes, bullying works.
Dr. Singer was able to share how the developing brain differs from the ability of adults to process negative events and make positive changes.
The catastrophe would be that this one thing seems like the worst thing. And not only does it seem like it, but it feels like it. And the feelings are so intense and they're overwhelming, which means they can't really think through what's going on. You'll have a 17-year-old who does something like a fender bender. In their mind and in their hearts, like in their feelings, it is the worst thing ever. And the adults around them are like, look, you're way overreacting. And they're like, you don't understand. And the adults are like, no, you don't understand, which of course results in a total disconnect between the adolescent who's freaking out and the adult who's able to kind of talk reasonably And so there's that disconnect. So they don't even have somebody who can they can rely on to outsource the thinking process. But the reason is because of what's going on in the brain. They're just totally locked into their emotion center and not able to get to the thinking part to do this long-term, you know, problem solving, pros and cons, all that sort of stuff. The appropriate response to finding marijuana in your kid's backpack would depend on what had happened before. If this was the third time that it had been found and you'd already had the conversation about this is what the house rules are, these are the expectations, you know, what's going on. Like if there was that conversation and there was a consequence that the kid knew about, then it would be appropriate to enforce the consequence. If this was the first time that marijuana was found in the backpack, then it would be totally appropriate to say, hey, we found marijuana in your backpack. Is there anything that you'd like to tell us? Or, you know that this is not something that we support, and we're not mad at you, but we're just curious if there's something going on that you'd like to tell us about. And if the kid's like, no, then you would have the conversation and you would say, I know that it's not particularly fun to talk to your parents after they find pot in your book bag when you know you're not supposed to have it, but we promise that we're not going to get mad at you right now, that we're not going to judge you, that we're not going to punish you. For us, the most important thing is that you are able to talk to us about what's happening in your life right now. And if the kid's like, I don't feel comfortable talking to you, at that point, the conversation turns to, okay, so what are you worried is going to happen if you tell us? Well, I'm worried this and this and this. Okay. Thank you for letting us know. What else? Right? So just opening the door to that conversation in as much of a non-judgmental way as possible.
So what happened to James Candy on August 6, 2017? If he set out to harm himself, why hasn't he been found after all of this time? Is it possible that he started a new life somewhere, or that he left to go meet someone? Numerous searches by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and their trained dogs, helicopters, and other resources have never located any trace of James in the area surrounding his home. At the time of his disappearance, James Candy was 17 years old, approximately 5 foot 8 inches tall, and about 122 pounds. He had short, dark blonde hair and blue eyes. If you have any information about James Candy's disappearance, please call the Royal Canadian Mounted Police at 780-632-2223. You can follow James's story on Facebook at Find James Candy.
If you go onto our Facebook page and look through our pictures, you'll see a picture of an old Chevy pickup, and Reggie is laying beside the right rear tire. That pickup had only been in our yard for a week before James had left, and for just about a month after James left, Reggie would go and lay beside the right rear tire of that truck every day. And when Reggie was in the house, he would go to James's room. Well, he wouldn't go in the room. He'd go as far as the door, but he would not go back in the room. From then on, he had to be in our room. He would not go to James's room. He would go to the door and look through the door into the room, but that's it. He would not go back in the room. He was the best dog we ever had. And then I had to take him in and get him put down because he had cancer. We'd only had him for a year and a half. Somebody was giving him away. There was a Facebook group in Beggarville, free to a good acreage home. And I saw him. I went, okay. I talked to Karen, and Karen says, no. Well, I'd already made an arrangement. The permission was denied, so now I just beg for forgiveness. And then when Reggie was there, he just fell right in love with Reggie. That was his buddy. And when we brought that pickup truck home, as soon as we got it off the trailer, he opened the door. Come on, Reggie. Reggie jumped up in the truck and he says, it's just like I imagined it, Dad. I'll have my truck and my dog beside me. He says, everything's good.
That brings us to the end of episode 167. I'd like to thank Colin, Karen, and Dr. Singer for taking the time to speak with us. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey. Stay tuned to the very end to hear a promo from one of my favorite shows, Canadian True Crime. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Oregon. Thanks for listening.
Canada may be known as the friendliest country in the world, but make no mistake, it has some of the most shocking criminal cases too. Canadian True Crime takes a deep dive into some of Canada's most well-known crime stories, as well as others you probably haven't heard of, one case at a time. If you like straightforward, fact-based crime stories and don't mind them being told by an Australian living in Canada, you can find me on your favourite podcast app just by searching for Canadian True Crime.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.